Hey Vic, how you doing?
Hi Rach, how are you?
I'm fantastic.
I should be saying good morning, but we lost an hour, so it's afternoon.
I know, I was saying before, Michelle, she's on a 6-2 today and had to be up really early. So I was up with her. I think I've had about 30 minutes sleep since 4 this morning. So I'm thankful that you've come on the show today because you have got quite a story to tell as a proud trans woman like myself. So just before we go back in time with that, so obviously you have been a jogger, but tell me fair to everybody what you've done as a living, really, where your interest in horses came from and the different areas that surrounding that, and even today as to where you're now living as well, which is a beautiful, like, full circle. So where did it all start?
So I was actually born in Malta in 1965. My father was in the Navy out there, so my parents lived out there for 5 years. I don't know if I was a mistake or it was meant to happen.
I know that feeling.
but anyway, I was brought home at a very, very young age. Otherwise, I'd have had to do military service for Malta. And then we lived in Chiswick in London. Okay. With my mother's parents for a while. And then my father managed to buy a house and we lived just up the road. But my actual love for horses came through my grandfather, because I used to just sit on his lap as a youngster, like 3-4 years old, and he used to watch the racing on a Saturday. And I just kept saying, oh, I want to be a jockey, I want to be a jockey. And it never left me. And fortunately, I did manage to leave school, moved up to Newmarket, and got an apprenticeship. And within a few months of actually getting my apprentice license, I rode my first ever winner at Windsor in August of 1983.
Right, so how old were you then when you first got on a horse?
So I was 17 then.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
And what was that when you rode your first winner? Was that on the flat?
Well, it was really surreal, because it was only my second ride. I had my first ever ride at Newmarket. And it's not, when you're an apprentice, you don't all of a sudden just get loads and loads of rides given you. You know, you've got to work hard to show the trainer that you're dedicated and you've got ability. So my first ride actually was in June, and then this was my second ride in August, so I had to wait quite a long time between rides. And I arrived at the race course, and without knowing, my father had turned up with his friends, which, you know, was really nice. He didn't tell me he would come in or anything. And the horse actually won. And so it was just so nice that Dad was there to see me ride my first winner.
No way. And what, can you just tell us all about what's the preparation like on the day that you are going to race? Because all we see is you get on the horse, and obviously there's a lot more that happens before that.
Yeah, right? So obviously all horses in this country are exercised most days. So they're exercised sort of Mondays to Saturdays. So them horses have to be exercised in the morning. And usually what you would do, you'd go into the stable that you're riding for, tack up your first lot that goes out, which is usually in the summer, it can be anything from 5:30 in the mornings to 7:30 would be your first ride. And you've got to take them out exercise, which usually takes about an hour. Right. And then you come back in, they get washed down, they might have a pick of grass. And then you would tack up your second lot. And usually if you're going racing, you'd probably only ride two horses in the morning prior to going home. If you have to lose weight, either, you know, you jump in the sauna. Or all go for a run. And yeah, you then get to the races. If you've never ridden at that racetrack before, you'd possibly walk the track. And then get in, the valet would get your silks ready, your colours that you wear. You see jockeys wear, you know, all different colours. Usually you have your own breeches and boots. And then he would then get your saddle. And every horse is allocated a weight differently in handicaps. In level weighted races, everything would carry probably 9 stone. So not every jockey is the same weight. So what you have to do, say I was 8 stone, my weight would have to be made up to 9 stone with the saddle and a weight cloth.
Ah, right, okay.
Yeah, so, whereas if you was, say, 8 stone 10, you'd just get a saddle that weighs 4 pounds, and that would make it up to 9 stone.
I see.
So that all gets done. Then you take your saddle to the clerk of the scales. You stand on the scales to make sure you're carrying the correct weight. Pass that to the trainer. Trainer then takes that back to the racecourse stables. Saddles the horse up. They go walk round the parade ring where you see them prior to racing. And then you'd go out, you'd get your orders from the trainer in the paddock, he legs you up, and then it's all down to you and the horse.
I mean, it's incredible how much effort actually goes into that. I was talking to my friend Anika, and she said, because last week, as you know, on the show, I was doing If You've Ever Bet on the Grand National, and she said, I used to just pick the colours. And I said, it's funny, because I used to do
it's,
that.
But, it's usually the best way.
But, you know, I always remember when I was younger, because my dad used to bet all the time. He didn't put big money on. It was only, you know, pence each way and things like that. But I used to think that the name of the horse that you'd see running was the name of the horse. And I used to say to me, Dad, what a really stupid name for
a horse. Yeah, no, every horse is named, say an owner buys the horse, they obviously are named. Some of them, obviously, similar to owning any pet, really. And even in dog breeds, you know, say the dog's father was Jack or Wilfred or whatever, and the mother was called something else. Sometimes an owner will combine the two names to name their horse.
Oh, right.
Or it might be totally different. If you are very passionate about a certain place or a certain person, you then have to, especially with people, you have to say you wanted to call a horse Elvis Presley or something.
Okay.
You'd have to go to whoever is in control or manages that person at that time, and you have to get authority to name that horse after that person before you can actually actually name that horse. And then every horse has a passport like a person that goes off to Weatherby's. They okay it gets stamped, and then that's how the horse's name is there officially.
Right, okay. So I know you were a professional jockey for 17 years, and again we're going to come back to your transitional journey after this next track, but you did ride over 250 winners, didn't you, as well?
Yeah, I was very fortunate. I mean, in the racing world, it's probably not a massive amount when you look at the likes of Frankie Dettori and Tony McCoy and people like that, you know. I was more of a workmanlike jockey, so I had to really work hard for everything I got. Over jumps, I used to ride a lot of the poorer horses that weren't so good at jumping, and work my way up, hoping that they would go and win. And then that, obviously, if they improve, they might win you a big race, you know. Wow. But yeah, I rode, and at one time, sort of for a period of 5-6 years, I was able to mix flat racing and jump racing together, which is quite difficult because flat racing weights are a lot lower compared to National Hunt jumping horses weights. So the flat rates range from now, well, it used to be lower, but now it's 8 stone 4 up to 10 stone, depending on how the ability of that horse and what the handicapper assesses it at. And then jump racing, the bottom weight is 10 stone up to 12 stone.
Oh, right, right.
So obviously, if you was just 8 stone, it for you to race over jumps isn't going to really be ideal for that horse that you're riding, because if you're going to be carrying, say, 10 stone 7, you're going to be carrying 2.5 stone of dead weight.
Of course, yeah.
Which is very hard for a horse, whereas if it's in body weight, your body is moving, so you can make yourself that bit lighter on top of a horse.
Oh,
whereas if dead weight is literally sat on the horse's withers, it's like just carrying a ton of weight on your back, you know?
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Well, I am going to go into this next fact now. But what did Vicky do when she finished racing professionally? Find out after this track. That's right, welcome back to First Race Radio on your Sunday to Rach on Sunday. And I'm joined by the lovely Vicky Smith, former professional jockey. Hey, Vic, how you doing?
Hi.
So we were talking before, obviously you rode professionally for 17 years and you told us the effort that went in, obviously prepping for the race prior as well. So what did you do? How did you come to the decision to finish racing? And then you went on to quite a really good next venture, didn't you?
Yeah, so it was about 2000 and my rides were starting to dry up and injuries were starting to take their toll, you know. So I decided to hang up the boots. It actually was a little bit premature because I took a ride at Plumpton Racecourse and I sort of more or less said I'd stop riding. And this friend of mine, he said, "No, just come ride this one for me, will you?" Anyway, it was running really well at going to the full flast at Plumpton, and I give it a boot in the belly to jump the fence, and a pair of us crashed to the floor, and I broke my collarbone. So totally, I laid there and I thought, no, this is the last time.
Definitely. Oh no. How long did that take you to recover from that?
So collarbones, when you're sort of riding and stuff like that, injuries, you always try to get back as quickly as possible. So had that been while I was thinking about continuing riding, I've ridden 3 weeks after breaking collarbone.
Oh no, right. So what did you do when you finished your riding then?
So I went off to Dubai for a spell. So I'd done a few winters over there.
Oh right, okay. What was that like?
Yeah, very good. I mean, my first ever trip over there was in 1994. There was like one hotel on the beach.
Yeah.
And it was just desert everywhere, but it was a real eye-opener, and it was for one of the sheikhs, so they had some real good horses there. I had some good times over there, really good times, and just was able to see throughout the years Dubai growing. And I haven't actually been back there since 2008, and it's grown double the size again.
It has changed quite a bit. But
yeah.
So when you finished riding, you actually, it was training you went into, wasn't it?
What I done, I worked as an assistant to a good friend of mine. And then he went off to Hong Kong in 2000. And I decided to take out a training license myself. And I had about 100 winners training.
What did that feel like, Vicky? Obviously,
do you know, it's a complete, it's completely different. I never used to get get nervous riding horses, but I got nervous when my horses were racing as a trainer.
So as a trainer, do you get to choose your jockey?
Yes. Yeah.
So would you like scout them, so to speak?
I had some good friends that were still riding at the time. So I used them.
Yeah. Okay.
And then obviously used top jockeys when they were available, you know.
Right. Okay. That's fantastic. And how many years did you do that for then? So I know
So that was for 8 years.
That's fantastic. And what did you do when that finished?
So then I took up a driving job, driving a jockey.
Who ended up
champion jockey on the flat, Sylvester D'Souza.
Oh, right.
So I drove him for a few years. And then he went off to Hong Kong one winter, and I got a job back with a company that I was going out to Dubai for called Godolphin, and they're a big breeding and racing company in the UK. And I now do what's called equine security. So they have about 12 studs around locally, and there's a team of us that patrols at nights, just keeping looking after the welfare of mares, foals, and stallions that they own. You know, and this time of year, it's the height of the breeding season because foals are being born. See, racehorses, their birthday officially is January the 1st. So whether you're born March, April, May, June of that year, you're officially, your birth date is January the 1st. Oh, so it keeps everything. So obviously you don't want to be born before January the 1st. So they make the mares to produce between January and May is probably the best times, you know?
Yeah.
Because then once they're born as well, they're able to get out, and the spring grass is very good for them, which will help bone growth and health. So their months are, you know, while we're in that at this present moment, it's the height of them being born, and then also the mares then getting covered back by the stallions.
That is fantastic. So before we introduce this next track, and then obviously we're going to talk about your wonderful journey. So, yeah. I mean, it's amazing. I found out where you've moved to a new property. Before I come to that, so you rode horses, you then trained them. As a job now, obviously, you overlooked them, so you're still keeping with them. And you've moved somewhere which sort of follows that link, doesn't it?
Oh, gosh, I'm there now. I just moved to, I'm in the process of moving to an apartment in Newmarket, which looks over the famous Warren Hill Heath Gallops, where some of the most famous trainers have trained and still train their horses today.
I think it's absolutely fantastic that you've had that continuity all the way through. So, Vicky, I'd like you to introduce this next song. It is Randy Crawford, Almaz. And what was the reason that you've chosen
this? This is for my best friend, actually. She's helping me move. She's actually unpacking the and taking all the staples out of my new king size bed. I've got a king size bed. You can imagine, all 5 foot nothing on me. I'll be able to roll over about 10 times before I fall out. So this is for Tracy. We were actually dating one time, then just became good friends, and we were out having lunch, and for some reason I just thought I could tell her exactly what I'm thinking at present and what I'm going to do with my life. Right. And so she was the first person I told.
Okay.
And she said, right, that's it, we're having a party.
Okay, well, hold that thought.
So this is Almaz for Tracy.
So Tracy, from everyone here at First Choice Radio, and also Vicky, this is just for you. That's how we are, First Choice Radio, on your Sunday, and welcome back to my interview with the lovely Vicky Smith, a champion jockey, fantastic trainer. She's still working with horses, and now she can see them out a new apartment window. So, Vicky, right, it is Trans Day of Visibility on Wednesday the 31st, and part of the reason I got you on wasn't just about that colourful work history that you've had. It was about your journey. So, we know when you first fell in love with horses. I want to know, when did you first know that there was something different about yourself?
So as a very young child, actually, my first recollection was when I was about 5 years old. I always used to, obviously, when you're young, you play with boys, girls, and whatever. And I always felt that I wanted to be that girl, and yet I shouldn't be because I'm a boy. And then I started to have this dream probably came on about 5 or 6 times throughout my childhood.
Yeah.
And it was first recollection was about 5 years old, and I'd be in bed, and a woman would come and take me from the bed. I couldn't tell you what this woman looked like or who she was, and pick me up. I'd go somewhere and I'd be put back in my bed as a girl, and it was the most warmest feeling ever. Oh, and that dream kept replicating probably 5-6 times throughout my childhood.
I mean, you touched on how young you were there, 5, and that was pretty much the same as myself, you know. Mm-hmm. I was playing with a Wendy house with me. My niece lived with my sister, and it was just that feeling that wouldn't go away at such a young age, you know.
And then the one thing I struggled with was I was still only attracted to girls. And obviously nobody to talk to growing up about that and your feelings, and by this time I tried to make myself tough and be a boy, and you know, and hang around with the tough boys, and I think in a way with my love of horses as well, that the jump jockey side of things was more pointing me in that direction, because jump jockeys are a lot tougher, you know. They get injuries, they get smashed up, they take their falls, and I think that was sort of half my brain telling me that's where you want to go, because that would get all these thoughts out of your head, you know. But as it was, it wasn't that. It was still a love of racing, and I did thoroughly enjoy it as well. But yeah, as a child, that would have been my earliest days. And when I had girlfriends, everything gets suppressed then. So in good times, you could suppress your feelings. And, you know, it's how society has pointed you to grow up. You know, in them days, boys were meant to be boys and girls were meant to be girls.
I know,
simple as that.
And looking at when you were born, which was just a year before me, probably only months apart, really, me and you, I was 66. You know, there was no social media awareness, there was no YouTube, there was no Google, you know?
No, nothing, and nobody to talk to. And, you know, I mean, it's only just now that a lot of people understand a lot more and are a lot more educated about transgender people. Whereas in them days, nobody would have ever met a trans person, you know?
Not at all. I mean, I always remember a film that really made me realise that I wasn't alone. And I was only young when I seen it, so I was probably in my teens. And it was The Naked Civil Servant with John Hurt. Quentin Crisp, and it was
Quentin Crisp.
It was that ironic scene where the trans woman just put a lipstick on the cafe table and walked out, because she could see what he was struggling with without him actually opening up. And that really, really resonated with me. And the other scene in that was where, you know, if you remember, the father was a real man's man, and he was sitting at the dinner table with the wife, the mum and the sister, and he actually came down wearing lipstick, you know, and I was thinking, wow, you know, how brave was he? I am going to play a song now before we come back and talk about the day that you decided that you were actually going to come out and be true to yourself as Vicky. And whilst we were off air, everyone, we were actually talking about Neil Diamond, and one of my favourite artists. You can probably hear me screaming his tracks on karaoke. One of my favourite tracks I'm going to play now. I do love all of them. And it's going to be this one for you, Vicky. It is Cracklin' Rosie, just for you here on First Choice Radio. Welcome back to Rach on Sunday, where I'm joined by the lovely Vicky Smith, former champion jockey and trainer. How are you doing, sis?
All good, thanks.
So,
all good.
You touched on Neil Diamond here, one of my favourite artists. Right, so you realised who you were, and what was your decision to come out? What brought that about, and where were you?
So, once my riding career finished, obviously that takes a lot of excitement out of your life, and busy times and training finished. I had a few very good 7-year relationships with a couple of different girls. And my last previous relationship, which finished probably about 6 years now. Once that finished, I took time to sort of think, I'm really struggling with this now. And so I took a year just exploring myself, going out. I decided on 2016 that every day of my life I would say, if I didn't do this, would I go to my grave regretting it? And every day I said yes. And so I got through to 2017, and that was it. I was full steam ahead.
I think, you know, because I started transitioned at 49, and mm-hmm. you know, I made that decision that I thought, you know, it was something in my past life. I know you mentioned about doing macho stuff to get away from things.
Yeah.
You know, at 24, I was a 25-stone bodybuilder, you know. I was a black mm-hmm. belt second dan of jiu-jitsu, and I was doing all these things. I was engaged many times. And you just go, you know, you're trying to go through the normality, but in the end, you have to make that decision. And something Arnold Schwarzenegger said, which really resonates with me, and he said, you either exist in life or you excel. And that's something mm-hmm. that I believe in every day. And as a trans woman having transitioned at 49, you know, I make the most of every single day, you know. I thought, well, if I live to, you know, 80, 85, let me just have 35 years of being true to myself and enjoying mm-hmm. life, you know. And my motto is simply, let's make, you know, today so good that yesterday's jealous. So, you know, it gets to that turning point, doesn't it, Vicky?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, obviously all the worry about what will people think, will you lose family and stuff. I mean, I've been very, very fortunate. I'm very blessed in the fact to have had a good career as a male and to have transitioned and been accepted and loved by everybody within the racing fraternity.
This is it because it's a hard enough journey as it is, and the thing is, I know many people where they don't get support. I could even mention Michelle, whose mum mm-hmm. and dad don't support her, you know. And you think, coming out, your parents would be, if they were on board, then yeah, okay, you can maybe get your brothers and sisters to come on board and whatever siblings you have. And it's a hard enough journey without that worry of maybe losing friends and family along the way. But we have to be true to ourselves, don't we?
Yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, it's just believing in yourself as well and accepting yourself. You know, all you're doing is putting yourself through turmoil every day when you... I always think sometimes you got to be slightly... what you got to do, you've got to decide that, put yourself first.
You have to be selfish.
You've got to put yourself first, because you know, you live your life to please others all your life, and if you've been in turmoil all your life, you've got to please yourself.
Vicky, you have to love yourself first and foremost.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah,
and I have a saying as well that I normally have on my Facebook, you know. I say, love yourself, you know, you're amazing, and there'll only ever be one of you. I am going to play one more track and then we're going to come back. It is Diana Ross. I think it's quite appropriate for us, sis. And it goes a bit like this. It's I'm Coming Out. That's right, we are First Choice Radio on your Sunday. Coming to the last couple of minutes now, we've had the lovely Vicky Smith on the phone with regards to Trans Day of Visibility next Wednesday, the 31st, and a fascinating story. I think I need a drink. A fascinating story of being a professional jockey, then a trainer. She excelled at that. And now she's looked over stables, which are absolutely incredible. And now faces the course as well. I have got another song that lined up that I am going to finish on. But before I do, don't forget, we've got David Sibbald up next, 1 till 3. The Sarah Armstrong show as well, the weekend show. We've got the Michelle Ann show. And we've also got... we've got Mick Fagan as well in the weekend, the Sunday selection, 9 to 11, so don't go anywhere. So, Vicky, so we were talking there about being selfish and doing it for ourselves, you know, and that is the most important I'd say the bit of advice that you could give to somebody, it'd be look after yourself, isn't it? You know, you've got to be true to yourself.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
It's not an easy
because you just cause yourself more mental strain and issues, you know. And the other thing that most people who have eventually come out, whatever part of the LGBT plus group you are better people after they have come out.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I know when I came out, I felt like a huge weight had come off my shoulders. And, you know, I explained to people, I said, it's like when you're on your journey, it's like building a wall, you know, I'm piece by piece, you add another brick, you know, and sometimes some have to come away. But, you know, you end up with your friends, you know, you meet some of the most amazing people, you know, we're friends now. You think you're on your own, but we have such a massive worldwide family out there, Vicky, don't we?
Yeah. And I found just in my industry, I've ended up with more friends than I ever had before as well, with people wanting to go out and interact with me, you know? So it's not just within the LGBT groups. It's nice to know that there are, you know, in society, everybody's pleased for you to be happy.
I mean, the thing is diversity. Every single person in the world, we're all unique and individual, whatever range of the spectrum. So diversity in general should be celebrated more. Yes, we have the Trans Day of Visibility, but everybody's unique, you know?
Yeah. Everybody's and unique. I always think as well, you know, anybody should accept anybody in their lives if they're happy in their own lives.
Of course.
As long as that person is a nice person, does it matter who they are, what colour they are, what gender they are? Doesn't matter at all, does it?
Not at all, no. And I think a lot of the time, you know, and as a trans woman, it's hard in the beginning for us because we change a lot over time, same with estrogen and everything. And it is a hard journey at first because all we want to do is walk from A to B.
Being in 5 minutes.
run and blend in. You know, I say, I wish I'd have face masks at the beginning of my journey, you know, to hide me 5 o'clock shadow. But never mind. But Vicky, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today.
You're very welcome. It was an absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure. And any time.
It has been absolutely beautiful speaking to you. So don't go anywhere. We're going to catch up now. You have been listening to Rach on Sunday, another awesome interview. The website is going to be getting updated with all the past interviews as well. I'm going to leave you with this one. It's from the greatest showman to all my beautiful brothers and sisters out there and everyone in the LGBTQ+ family. You've been listening to Rachel Cruz. This is just for you.